How much time? 30 seconds. I'm on right now. I don't believe you. What?
You're listening to The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
All right, we're on.
Ready, Phil?
We're on in 5, 4.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
Gentlemen, welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM. Just trying to get over this idea that I can't believe it was 20 years ago. Folks, for those that are just tuning in, I'm Teeds. Jason, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. It's been a bit of a busy week, but yeah, here we are.
Yeah, busy week for sure. Still out of the office, as you may well be aware, folks, as the asbestos removal is underway at the University Center, where UMFM is usually located, but we're going to be out of office for a few more weeks, probably, in terms of what's going on. But again, I was just mentioning 20 years ago. The song that you're hearing in the background is the is from a specific movie that we're going to be talking about in a few seconds. The 1970 blues rock song "Ride Captain Ride" by Blues Image, off their album Open. Again, 1970, long time ago. People are going to be like, what's all the old songs lately? This song hit number 4 on the Canadian and US charts. It was the band's only top 40 hit in North America, but it made a pretty, well, I don't know if it made a huge impact, but it certainly was featured in one of 2004's biggest movies. As this song was featured in a movie that premiered July 10th, 2004. Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy, premiered yesterday. It feels weird to say that it's 20 years old. It seems like time just flew by.
It's so painful to think about the fact that was 20 years ago.
Like crazy.
It's a timeless film, right? Like, it's from that era of Will Ferrell movies where he was just... It felt like there was a new Will Ferrell movie coming out every year. It was like kind of in his most productive period. I think of the number, just the quantity of films he was making at that time, because it was around the same time as like Step Brothers and a few others. Was it Semi-Pro came out in that era?
Yeah.
Kicking and Screaming came out in that era on the children's movie front. But like, it's timeless in a way where it's like it could have come out last year.
Yeah.
Because it's never gone away.
I mean, I don't know if the world's ever been the same after hearing about seeing all these great actors together. Again, Will Ferrell was in it, Christina Applegate, Veronica Corningstone. But I mean, the level of people that didn't get put in the movie. Now, here's the thing. Mm-hmm. Paul Rudd, Steve Carell, David Koechner were all in the movie as well. I mean, they played Brian Fantana, Brick Tamlin, and Champ Kind. As we know, Vince Vaughn was Wes Mantooth, the opposite of Ron Burgundy for the other station. But again, here are the names of other people that appeared in it: Chris Parnell, Catherine Hahn, Fred Armisen, Fred Willard, Danny Trejo, Jack Black, Judd Apatow, Adam McKay obviously starred, and he also directed it. Tim Robbins, Luke Wilson, Ben Stiller, Missy Pyle, Seth Rogen all appeared in the movie.
Ben Stiller was in that movie.
That's right. He was Arturo Mendez in the fight scene.
Right.
Here's the weird part, though. Will Ferrell and Adam McKay had a list of people they were trying to get to come and play parts in this movie. Now, again, you're going to go, that's impossible. There's no way that would have worked. They wanted Ed Harris to play Ed Harkin. So Ed Harris as Ed Harkin instead of Fred Willard would have been just madness. Dan Aykroyd was considered for the role that Chris Parnell played as Garth Holliday.
Mm-hmm.
Alec Baldwin was considered for the role of Frank Vichard. There you go. Yeah. That was who Luke Wilson eventually played in that fight scene. James Spader was considered for the role of Brick Tamland.
Really?
Hold on. It gets worse. Brian Fontana had three people in the running for it. Bob Odenkirk, Ben Stiller, and Ron Livingston were all considered for that role.
Okay, I've got to go back
to the... We're not done. John C. Reilly was originally considered for the role of Champ Kind. John C. Reilly, obviously good friends with McKay and Will Ferrell. The women, though, that had auditioned for the role of Veronica Corningstone, these are the women that actually came in and auditioned for it. Mm-hmm. Amy Adams, Leslie Mann, and Maggie Gyllenhaal were all in the running.
Whoa.
Like, what?
I want to run down that list and cross-reference it to the identical scene in the second movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, how many people did they get on the second crack at it?
And that's what you have to wonder. Like, after how big that first movie was, you kind of wonder, like, was everybody like, yeah, I'll come and do it. I don't even care anymore. Like, no big deal.
Yeah, but it was also in an era of film where it's like, it took a while for that second movie to come around, because it wasn't just like, today it would be like, oh, this movie did really well, like, let's just greenlight a sequel and get going. It took a while for that second movie to come out.
Yeah. 2013 was when the second movie was released.
Yeah, and it was when it was like, it's weird to say a resurgence in Anchorman support, but it really was like a resurgence of that film, and they got the second crack at that stupid fight scene. And sure, the second movie wasn't as good as the first, but still.
I was going to say, you think about all the things that Ron Burgundy's fallen into after that, right? Mm-hmm. Like all the sports things. Like Will Ferrell's constantly at LA Kings games. He did that whole run where he went as Ron Burgundy on the curling with up here in Canada. He was down on LA Kings broadcast as Ron Burgundy. Like, it really became sort of like a second life for you know, not for Will Ferrell. I mean his career wasn't hurting it by any means, but it almost became like a second job where it was, okay, come as Ron Burgundy to everything. Like, don't come as Will Ferrell, come as Ron Burgundy.
Exactly. Like, it's, man, I cannot think of Brick Tamlin being played by anybody
else. I know, Steve Carroll is perfect for that.
It was, maybe it's because he just turned in such a good performance and that role has been just memed to death. Like, I still, people still say I love Lamp to this day.
Oh, yeah. Like that, yeah. Like, there's no doubt that somebody's going to say it somewhere if they hear that, you know, something about a Lamp. I love Lamp. Like, it's, mention Lamp and somebody's got that rolling right away for it. So.
Exactly.
Lots of movie talk in terms of the way we're starting the show, but we're going to get into the hockey stuff here right away. If you want more movie talk, not that we're usually doing this to promote anybody else or, you know, get anybody else famous or anything like that, but Ultrasonic Film is on at 10 p.m. tonight with James, so tune into that if you want to hear a little bit more movie stuff. But here comes the hockey stuff as we get into things, and I want to start it off with... I don't really know Chevy to throw Kevin Cheveldayoff off to throw a lot of shade, but it seems like he did this past week when Jets development camp was on and wrapping up, and Kevin Cheveldayoff had a quick comment about a guy that was at camp compared to a guy maybe that wasn't. In saying this to the press, quote, says a lot about a player like Brad Lambert who doesn't have to come, but wants to come here and be a part of it and take on that leadership role, unquote. Now, people can read into that what they want. They can just go, that's a nice comment about Brad Lambert, and he's there to play hockey. But it's also sounding like a little bit of a shot towards Rutger McGroarty. And I'm not saying, again, not saying that McGroarty's situation was going to be solved by any means. As the reporters asked, Cheveldayoff at the development camp if there's any sort of, you know, developments in the McGroarty situation. He said, quote, you would have it if there was, unquote. I don't know if we're ever going to see Rutger McGroarty in a Jets uniform, but as we'll see in a few minutes maybe when we talk about it, but I don't know if Chevy even wants him around at this point. From the way, I mean, I think he does, but I don't think he wants him. I don't think he's hitching his wagons to him, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you look at a player like Rutger McGroarty, and any team would want him in their system, I think.
Well, we'll talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, for like the position of like what kind of prospect he is.
Yeah.
The talent that he has. I think and we will get to this, but I think he's getting some very bad advice, because if I were any of the guys in the Jets system right now that's looking to be an everyday NHLer, I would look at it and say, hey, a lot of important guys are gone. There are some big holes in this lineup. Like, not exactly where you'd want it to be, obviously. Like, you're not going to probably jump into a top six role right away. But there are some holes in this lineup, and you're going to have the chance to, you know, a shot to go to the development camp, impress, go to the main camp, and try and get a shot at the NHL roster and some NHL playing time. Like, I think that's exactly why Brad Lambert is there. He sees the path. He knows how well he's played. He knows what this organization thinks of him. So he's going to the development camp to get that little bit of a leg up, because he's still in that period where it is worth it for him to go. It's not like he's going to be there trouncing the other players. There's still things for him to learn. There's still development for him to have. And I think it's always a good idea to continue that journey, particularly when it's within your organization and you can get kind of the idea of what's expected of you, and they can get a better view and a better understanding of who you are, what you bring, and what you need to work on. But in saying all that,
I mean, there are top six positions that are open. Like, let's not beat around the bush. I mean, there are going to be guys that compete for them, whether it be, you know, Morgan Barron, whether it be Cole Perfetti, whether it be any of sort of the young guys that want to get the Rasmus Kuparis wants to step in, maybe David Gustafson, who maybe wants to step in a little bit. There is going to be opportunity for players to step up and step in. And having Rutger McGroarty at this development camp would have gone a long way to seeing how close he is to taking that spot. Obviously, he's not there. But now that we know that Brad Lambert is there and the guys are seeing him, you know, the management and scouts and everybody are seeing him again, and they're going, you know what, this guy's got a lot of positives. The opportunity for Brad Lambert is that much closer now simply by showing up to camp. And if I was McGroarty's team, you were just saying, you know, maybe he's getting some bad advice. If I was McGroarty's team, I would have told him to go to camp and at least show up so that other teams can see how he plays.
Mm-hmm.
And exactly. That's the problem.
Like, does McGroarty want to be a center?
I don't know. I think he just wants to be an NHLer from what he's saying. That's what I think it is.
Like, I mean, you are right. There is a couple pretty big holes. Like, you've got Connor Scheifele, Vilardi there. Like, that's probably, if not your first line, two-thirds of it, and the center on your second line. Nick Ehlers is still there, and it's basically like, you know, down the middle right now, they've got Scheifele, Nemestikov, Lowry, and Gustafson.
Right.
A few other guys
that can fall into place if necessary. But yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And like, if you're Cole Perfetti, but maybe like you can. I know he's played center a few times, but maybe you can jump into that. If you're Rutger McGroarty, that would look pretty enticing to fight for that spot. And it was probably going to fall to Nemestikov because he's just a safe option for a team that really likes safe options. But you're right. Like, at least show up, right? Like, but the thing you want is a spot on an NHL roster. You're not going to get that anywhere else.
Okay. So
than the team that knows you.
So the team, it broke today on Winnipeg Sports Talk with Hustler. On, you know, they do it on YouTube in terms of where they are. Murat Atesh, who writes for The Athletic for Winnipeg, was on Winnipeg Sports Talk today. And he made the comment, quote, at least two other teams thought they had a deal for Rutger McGroarty during the first round of the draft. One of them, to my knowledge, was put off by the idea that his hope was a clear path to NHL playing time, unquote. Mm-hmm. It seems like lots of teams want to take a flyer on him, but nobody wants to give him a spot without earning that spot. And that's, I think, the key here, is you have to come in and earn that spot. It's not going to be given to you. Earn it.
Exactly.
And he would be wise to be in this development camp. Obviously, it's over now. Camp is over. There's no way for him to go back now. But at the end of the day, Mm-hmm. Rutger McGroarty going back to Michigan is the best option for him at this point because he hasn't played any meaningful hockey in, what, 4 months?
Exactly. Like, let's call a spade a spade. He was in a particularly weak draft. Like, that year,
yeah,
2022, it was also the draft where the Jets got Brad Lambert, who has shown that he is the talent that they thought they were getting. He's done very well for himself in the American League. But he, like, that was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You still have to prove yourself. I'm sorry. You're not, like, Juraj Slafkovský is probably, I think him and Logan Cooley are the two players coming out of that draft that have played any meaningful time in the NHL.
Like, Kevin Korchinski played with Chicago last year.
And Frank Nazar had some time.
Yeah. And then the other guy that was playing a little bit for Anaheim was Pavel Mintyakov.
Yeah.
And then other than that, there's been nobody that's played. Shane Wright had 16 games in there. That 2022 draft has only had two players hit 82 games so far, and that was Cooley and Slafkovský, as you said. Yeah. So
because it was two drafts ago.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't see where he's getting this idea that he's deserving of this direct path. Like, yeah, like, it's a situation where you want to know where you stand with an organization. And there is a log there, or there, up until recently, there was a log jam for the Winnipeg Jets. There's just a ton of really good players. Kevin Cheveldayoff and Rick Bowness, and to a degree, Paul Maurice, in the latter stages of his time here, have had this problem where they just love to stuff a whole bunch of fringe guys into the system from July 1st onward, and it gums up the works in terms of getting young guys some time in the lineup. That's an undeniable fact. But you still have to show up. And you still have to make a space for yourself.
That's
what Brad Lambert has done.
Right. And I mean, that's the
same amount of time.
Lambert played one game last year. Again, one game. We're not saying he's played a lot of NHL time at all. He's played one game. He has one assist in his NHL career. But what he did is he showed up and he played like it was his very last game of hockey. Like, he showed everybody he can play at that level. Not saying he won't make mistakes, and not saying that he won't fall into the same sort of rookie slumps that we see some of these players go through. Again, he's going to have to figure that stuff out.
Yeah.
But the fact that Brad Lambert has not complained about going to the Moose, has shown up at the Moose and scored a pile of points down there for them. And again, people are going to go, oh, well, that shouldn't matter. No, it does matter. Because
he led the Moose in points last year.
Yeah, he had 21 goals, 55 points in 64 games. Again, he makes mistakes down there. Nobody's going to deny that.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day,
he's also 20 years old.
Right. He shows up and he plays his tail off. Even if he makes mistakes, he goes back and tries to account for whatever by scoring the next goal. Like, he doesn't sit there and sulk. He doesn't sit there and whine. He doesn't complain about his playing time. He goes out and makes things happen. And McGroarty legitimately showed that he can do that at the World Juniors against other guys that are 18, 19. But at the end of the day, though, if McGroarty doesn't show up and play against the men that he's going to be playing against, nobody's going to trade for him. Nobody will.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, we've seen nothing from him. That's the problem, is that he has had a very short window. He's put in two seasons at the University of Michigan. 39 points in the first one, 52 points. Like, sure, fantastic second season with Michigan. But again, you're not seeing him against grown men in the American Hockey League, that step just below. You don't know how he's playing compared to the other players in the system. Like, that's what you need to see. So sign the ELC, play in the American League.
But, I mean, again, and people have already said that, you know, he sees his buddies like Frank Nazar go to Chicago and play three games there, you know, where they put him in the lineup. Chicago wasn't making the playoffs last year. Like, there's no chance that Chicago is going to make a mistake by putting a 19-year-old kid in the lineup. It's not going to hurt them. Who cares?
Yeah. Again, I think he's getting bad advice for his agent or his camp to tell him, like, hey, you're deserving of this.
Yeah,
direct shot to the NHL. That's how good you are. Your buddy's done it. Some guys in your draft class have done it when it's a very, very unique situation for the guys that were drafted that year.
But I agree with what the assessment of the Jets was, and that they were competing for first in the division, competing for first possibly in the conference. Mm-hmm. They don't have room for you. We can't put you into the lineup at this point. Go to the Moose, play out the rest of the season with the Moose, and we'll see what we can do for you.
But you
can't sulk about it.
Mm-hmm. Like, if you look at the guys from that draft who have played consistent time in the NHL, you have Juraj Slafkovský for Montreal.
Yeah.
You have Logan Cooley for Arizona, now Utah. You have David Juracek for Columbus. You have Kevin Korchinski for Chicago.
Well, but Juracek was up and down between Cleveland and Columbus all season, and people were confused by that because he was one of Columbus's better defenders. Mm-hmm. And Columbus justified it by saying, we want him to become our number one defenseman. He needs more development time.
Yes.
It's not they're holding him back. They're going, we need you to be better at what you mm-hmm. do. Not that we don't see you being our number one guy. We just need you to be better.
Yeah. Like, the only player from this draft that has put up any time on an any way competitive team is Simon Nemich for New Jersey.
Correct. Yeah.
New Jersey was brutal this year for some very obvious reasons. And it's still a really good team. But it's like, you go down the list and it's like, yeah, like the guys that have gotten the time are the guys that are on bad teams. Because those are the teams that need them soon, and need to know what they have. That's always the case with guys who make the jump quickly.
But this is the thing, is that I don't understand how his team sits there and goes, you know what, we see the other guys in your class and we see the same problem. Like, again, I look at the teams in 2021 who have guys that have played a number of games now. Owen Power with Buffalo, mm-hmm. right? He's a Michigan guy. Matty Beniers from Seattle. Both of those teams were terrible in 2021. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no denying that. Mason McTavish went up there, no big deal. The other guy from the U.S. National Under 18, Luke Hughes, went to New Jersey. Again, mm-hmm. these are all teams that were bad. Kent Johnson went to Columbus, plays 130 games there. Again, another mm-hmm. guy that he's played with. Columbus, Seattle, and Buffalo have three U Michigan guys in the top five, and they're all terrible teams. Mm-hmm. Like, we need to stop looking at what other people are doing and start looking at what's best for Rutger and start figuring out how to get Rutger into the system in order for him to either be traded or played.
Yeah. Because right now, you're not going to have the exact same situation.
Right now, sitting at home is not going to serve him any purpose other than you're going back to Michigan next year.
Exactly. Like, it's such a bad... It's such bad advice to give him.
I agree.
Like this is a team that until the wheels fall off is going to be trying to make the playoffs. Like, I'm sorry, you're not going to make it into this lineup very consistently unless playoffs are a lock.
Right. Yeah.
In like towards the end of the year. And then maybe you'll get a sniff. Maybe you'll get a look, or if something terrible happens, because that's what this team is doing. They're trying to compete for the playoffs. And, you know, you've seen the guy picked after you leapfrog you in the depth chart because he's put in the time and he's shown that he can. Well, we knew he could play against men because he was playing in Liga when he got drafted.
Right. Yeah.
But like.
But coming over to the AHL, though, and showing that you can play North American hockey in the AHL matters a lot more than playing European hockey against guys over in the Finnish league, for example. And I'm not saying that there's anything bad about the Finnish league, but at the end of the day, though, North American hockey matters to North American hockey teams. Simple mm-hmm. as that.
Like, you've had, you know, players that have been drafted by the Jets, like you've had Chibrikov playing, you know, games with the Moose.
Yeah.
He's shown that I think he deserves a shot. Obviously, Ville Heinola is a unique situation. Chaz Lucius, I think, deserves a shot at some point.
If Chaz could stay healthy, he'd probably get a shot. But the problem is he can't stay healthy.
exactly. Like, the list is not insane of guys that are in front of him in the depth chart. Like, sure, you're probably going to bring Jeff Malott up for a couple games.
No, he signed with LA. He won't be coming
up. Oh, he did.
Yeah.
But like, you know, Axel Johnson-Fialbi joined this team right. And immediately showed like, hey, I can play games. I can chip in a few points here and there. I do the right things. I play the right way. I came in, I was a consummate professional and did what I needed to do. Like, and that was a good pickup by the Jets, but
yeah.
Like it's not a long list of guys ahead of him.
But it's the fact that he keeps falling further and further down the depth chart, though. That's the problem that I'm looking at. If I'm his team right now, mm-hmm. I go, I was probably in the top three, maybe to have a shot at making this team next year. I'm probably in the top 10 now. Like there's guys that have moved ahead of me simply because they show up. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to do that. So
yeah, that's the problem.
It's hard for me to justify you getting into a lineup if you're not even willing to show up and try to make that lineup.
Exactly.
But who am I to complain, I guess, in terms of what's going on? We've pounded through a whole pile of that. We got a whole bunch of other stuff to go through. I want to get to the next story, I think. And I think, Jay, you have a unique idea on this one as well, because I think it's kind of interesting what's going on down in Dallas. For everybody that might remember it, Jay, we talked about it as well. Bally Sports has basically folded all of their setup. They don't have any money left. They're going bankrupt. And they had deals with a whole pile of different regional sports network teams. Or they were regional sport networks for a bunch of NHL teams, including Florida and Dallas, for example. Dallas no longer has a regional sports network in their market. So they were kind of, knowing that Bally was going to be out of business, kind of started looking around and trying to figure out what they're going to do next. Mm-hmm. Dallas is going to do something that no other NHL team has done by creating their own streaming service called Victory Plus, a new to direct consumer platform that will stream live games in market starting in the 2024-2025 season. So next season, they're leaving terrestrial television altogether, but they'll offer Victory Plus to their market for free. Mm-hmm. Again, for clarification point, Stars TV market apparently is Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, and Arkansas. I don't know what that means for people that want to try and get, you know, a Dallas Stars game, say, in Kansas. I don't know if you can do that, but we'll have to see. However, these regional sports networks that are failing, that are basically going out of business, or, you know, not willing to pay the money to host NHL teams anymore, this is unique in that Dallas will legitimately be able to control all of the media on their streaming platform. Mm-hmm. They can show preseason games, they can show practices, they can show press conferences, they can show whatever they want with nobody to tell them otherwise.
Yeah, they can offer a complete package to their fans, basically end to end every day.
I think this is an absolutely, don't get me wrong, I know the NHL should have done this a long time ago, and the NHL should have had this a long time ago. They were going to claim, oh, we have the NHL network. No, you don't have the NHL network.
They have the infrastructure for it.
It's owned by NBC. Yeah, I know. That's the whole problem. They do have the infrastructure for it. Mm-hmm. So Florida and Vegas have deals with Scripps. Scripps is kind of like a local, like, over-the-air TV deal. So if you have, like, an antenna or whatever, you can still get their service or whatever. Vegas actually offered that for free. They gave away all the antennas to people that wanted them, and then they could watch all the games they wanted to watch.
The Phoenix Suns did a similar thing.
Right, yeah. But with Victory Plus, you don't need to have any of that. All you need to do is download the app or on your smart TV or on your phone, and you can watch the Stars anytime you want. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is the way that a lot of teams might want to start going, and apparently it's legitimately got other people in the NHL interested in it. They've been taking phone calls about, you know, about all this information and how did you guys do it, and we want to kind of do this. This is something we're thinking about. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, this could turn into an absolute cash cow for the Dallas Stars.
What I want to say is, Dallas Stars, welcome to what esports did in the early 2010s.
Well,
But that's the thing, right? Like, this is a business model that has been proven to be successful, because a multi-billion dollar industry is built off of this. Esport, like every esports league, when you're thinking about the League of Legends with the Champions League, the Overwatch League, Valorant Esports, the Call of Duty League, all of those big leagues, and you can throw in, you know, iRacing, you can throw in the NBA 2K League and a few others, they all offer their broadcasts for free on streaming platforms. They have sponsorships, they run advertisements, they have the paid events that people go to, they have everything done in-house. Sure, the platforms do take a cut, but they get to control all of that. They make the relationships with the brands. They bring in the money. They get the advertising revenue that goes directly to those leagues. And it boggles my mind that in 2024, the NHL has not realized that this is a viable business model, because you have these little video game competitions. I say little when you can't see the air quotes that I'm making, these little, but they're the most viewed sporting entertainment in the world. They are making billions of dollars doing this, giving it out for free. And okay, the fact that the NHL is tying itself to paid media like Sportsnet, like TSN, like TNT and ESPN in 2024 boggles my mind.
Okay, but here's the thing then. Again, we'll talk about a little bit more about this, because I mean, I think this needs to go deeper, but NBA just signed a brand new deal for next season that will pay them $76 billion, that's a B, $76 billion over 11 years with a whole bunch of terrestrial television networks in terms of like ABC, ESPN, all of those, NBC, there's a whole bunch of others that are involved in there. $76 billion is not a small number. But I also question, if the NBA can generate $76 billion, how much is left over for everybody else? Because now you have ESPN paying for NFL football, paying for NBA basketball. Are they really going to try and re-up for more money with the NHL then, if they're already unhappy with the NHL's deal?
And you're totally right. And I will add to that, we've seen this with Sportsnet.
Right.
They've paid that money up. They made this deal. They're paying this money. Are they going to make that money back?
No. Well, no. And we already know that, because ESPN has already said they're losing money every year on this.
Exactly. But business model doesn't make sense.
So here's the thing that and again, people are going to go, well, this, you know, it sounds like it's super easy to do. So they were legitimately trying to find ways to sort of get things into different places where they normally see their games. Stars president Brad Alberts legitimately sat down and had to go and look at what he called, quote, the most difficult business problem he's ever faced, quote, unquote, in his career. It's taken 18 months now, 18 months for them to figure out, because they don't know how to actually get their games on in sports bars anymore if they don't have that app ready to go.
Okay.
So they're going to miss out on all of the advertising that normally goes on in Dallas and in the market for all of their advertisers that are usually in sports bars. They legitimately can't be in some places anymore in terms of, you know, over the air or TV, you know, connections or whatever. You have to have a smart TV, which most bars and most things do, but other places don't. So they legitimately now have looked at, how do we fight that, or how do we change that setup? And again, that's where Alberts came out and said that finding ways to get Victory Plus in restaurants and bars is going to be the part of the rollout of the product, but it's going to happen. But he admitted that it's one of the things that he had no solution for the longest time. Mm-hmm. And I go, that's the difference between starting your own network, your own streaming service. And again, we can talk about, you know, it's the exact same for Disney Plus. It's the exact same for all the other ESPN Plus, all that kind of stuff or whatever, right?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, all they have to do for Dallas anyway, all they have to do is, again, get people on board early enough that they adopt Victory Plus as their way to view Dallas Stars games. And if they do that, I think they're going to be fine.
And I think they will be fine. I think this is going to be a fantastic move for them, because like, people underrate just how easy this stuff is.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the nice
like part. But like the way that the technology is going, like I have a smart TV. I don't use my TV very much, but I have a smart TV. My parents, who are not, who would be the first people to tell you that they are not tech literate, have a smart TV that they watch Netflix and Disney Plus and all the other stuff on it. And if they can figure it out, most people can. It's the technology has now become ubiquitous. Everyone's got a smartphone. Everyone's got a computer that can run this app. It's about putting in the work to make this the thing you need it to be.
So here's the catch, though. People's hands. Here's the catch, though, is that out-of-market fans cannot use Victory Plus because of the contracts and the deals they have signed with ESPN. So if you live outside of that TV market area and you download Victory Plus, it will be geo-blocked. You cannot use it. Mm-hmm. That sucks, to be honest. And I'm not saying that sucks for Dallas. It sucks for fans mm-hmm. if you're a fan of the Dallas Stars. I mean, don't get me wrong. I watched a bunch of Dallas Stars games last year. They were fantastic because Dallas was good in terms of what they did. But at the end of the day, though, if I can't see any Dallas games except for the ones that are on ESPN now, that kind of sucks because I would like to see the local guys mm-hmm. and what they're doing and certainly, you know, hear, see some of the stuff that they're working on for their broadcasts, which... Yep. And I won't lie to you. I mean, when I was doing, you know, women's hockey at the university and covering that, a lot of the ideas I brought in were pretty much copycat ideas from other things I saw that were successful. And I was hoping that, you know, the school and the conference and everything would jump on board with that. Mm-hmm. Why can't Canada West TV do this? Like, if they were really smart, they'd be able to run their own programming all day. Mm-hmm. And make buckets of money off the advertising.
Because they have the mindset that a lot of their schools have. That they cannot compete. That nobody cares. So why try? Right? Like all their mentality is the same as junior B teams here in Manitoba. It's like the only people that care are your parents.
But I can't make it
so they can pay.
That drives me nuts because if you're not going to try, there's no point. What's the point of having a sport then? What's the point of having athletes then?
Exactly.
I don't know. To me, it seems ridiculous, but whatever.
Like, do you think the Sea Bears came into Winnipeg and thought, yeah, no one's going to care. The Bombers are here. The Jets are here. The Moose are here. The Gold Eyes are here. Valor FC is here. No one's going to care. No, they came in and said, hey, we're going to put a fantastic product together and we're going to make people care. And you know what? They've become arguably the most popular sports team in this city right now.
I would say you're probably correct on that. They definitely sell out every night and they certainly are from what I've heard anyway, games are incredibly fun. So, mm-hmm.
But like that's a mentality. Like all you need to do is try it. Like it's, the fact that the Canada West YouTube channel is so underutilized kills me.
But
like,
I'm not going to get into it because I mean, I have lots of thoughts on that. And I know that I'm probably going to get yelled at for that if anybody catches this from Canada West and or the university to at which you work still.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, mm-hmm. underutilized is probably the nicest way to describe it.
Yeah. I will say to out-of-market Dallas Stars fans, if you're sad that you can't use Victory Plus, look up what a VPN is.
Well, yeah, I'm not saying that you should do that or shouldn't do that. There are lots of free ones out there you can get, but you have to make sure you can get into the Dallas market with that VPN. So, yeah, see what you can find for that. But exactly. A couple other smaller stories before we get going, because we got a pile of other stories to tackle here as well. For those that didn't hear, Cap Friendly went dark on Wednesday.
RIP.
The site is no more as Ted Leonsis bought it on June 9th and shut it down on July 10th.
Yeah, it was a great run. Like, honestly, it's nice that they finally announced what they were doing with their sister sites.
Yeah.
Because they'd started the NBA version of Cap Friendly.
Yeah, that's sweet.
And that's staying open. Yeah, that's staying open and staying independent, unless an NBA team pops by and wants to buy them. Which I mean, doesn't Ted Leonsis also own the Washington Wizards?
I don't think there's a push from the NBA as much as there was from the NHL about we don't like this. I think the NBA doesn't care.
I think the NBA doesn't care, but also the cap is way more flexible the NBA, where it doesn't matter as much. Whereas in the NHL, it matters a whole lot. So NBA teams probably can get by with not having the amount of information that Cap Friendly has. It's nice that they were going to do this regardless, but it's nice that they've clarified what's going to happen with their premium subscribers and people getting those prorated payouts.
Yeah. I mean, I'm happy that they're at least doing the right thing in terms of fixing, any mm-hmm. sort of shortfalls that they may have, people may be experiencing with the site shutting down. But mm-hmm. end of the day, it's a huge reason. It's again, I sort of laugh about this because I was writing about it on Hockey Blog in Canada, but it's kind of like the day the music died, right? Like, I mean, mm-hmm. that was one of the sites that everybody used and everybody checked and everybody had a link to, because I mean, it mattered to everybody. But mm-hmm. I guess that's neither here nor there now.
Yeah, and I will say Puckpedia they've done a lot of hard work updating the site recently. It looks very different from the last time I've used it. And they've got all of the big important stuff. Like, they've even got the agent list where you can look up all the NHL agents and see what clients they have.
That's interesting.
It's something that Cap Friendly had. It was in an underutilized thing.
Yeah.
But they have all of the information there. They've got a Capology tab, which has all of the kind of quick hits of what you need to know about all of the popular questions and all the rules around the salary cap, because this is the NHL. And for some reason, we all need to be lawyers about the salary cap and understand the minutiae of this really stupid document. Cause it's important. And it's incredibly important to this sport for some reason. They've done a fantastic job updating it. I am sad that such a valuable resource like Cap Friendly is going away, but super, super excited for the guys who run that site or ran that site, because that's the thing that you hope for, right? Hope for someone obviously there are people that are definitely hey, I want to just keep running this and I want to keep doing this. I want to keep being independent. I like doing this. But to get a chance to work in the candy store and work in professional hockey, it's pretty cool.
Oh, I'm taking nothing away from that. But I mean, again, the fact that the Capitals are shutting that site down, I've basically told the guys, shutter your site. We want all the resources for that. Sucks. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I just kind of wish that didn't happen. But one more story before we move on to a couple other ones. Patrick Laine didn't get traded at the draft. Reason being, according to what we heard from Aaron Portsline in Columbus, he is still in the NHLPA player assistance program, so he won't be able to be traded until he's out of that program. So mm-hmm. wishing Patrick Laine the best. Obviously, we want him to get better and find his way back to the NHL at least and score a few more goals for whomever he's going to play for. But Patrick Laine is still in the NHLPA, NHL player assistance program. So. Mm-hmm.
Hoping all the best for him. It's been a long journey for him, and he's a great guy, great hockey player. You hope he can get things sorted and get out of that situation in Columbus, which is not working for him.
A couple other news stories that came out for those that didn't hear: a Stonewall, Manitoba native is now going to be living in Palm Springs as the Coachella Valley Firebirds, who promoted, as we know, Jessica Campbell and Dan Bylsma up to the Seattle Kraken, needed a head coach. They went out and they found former Texas Stars and former Oshawa Generals head coach Derek Lakstal, who will now be their second head coach in team history. Good fit, I think, in terms of what he's got. Lots of experience, lots of knowledge about the game. He won a Kelly Cup with the Idaho Steelheads. He has two WHL championships after coaching the Edmonton Oil Kings to those victories. He spent some time with the Dallas Stars as an assistant coach. He's been around the AHL for a long time. For those that don't know, he spent 8 years with the Stars organization, where he saw the development in the AHL of players like Jamie Oleksiak, John Klingberg, Valerie Nichushkin, Esa Lindell, Radek Faksa, Jack Campbell, Dennis Gurianov, Jason Dickinson, lots of players who have multiple mm-hmm. NHL seasons and lots of success to their name. again, this is the part that I was shocked at because I didn't know Laxdal's career very much. He's a record over 516 in his 19 seasons as a head coach. He's hit 40 wins in 12 of those 19 seasons as a head coach. And he's been to the league final in all of the ECHL, WHL, AHL, and the OHL in his career. Like
this dude's a winner. This is why I get tired of like the 200 hockey men and like the 35 NHL head coaches that get recycled, because there are some darn talented coaches out there that deserve a shot to work their way up, right? Like we've seen Jessica Campbell get her chance to get into the NHL and, you know, get some time behind an NHL bench, which is going to be fantastic. But it's always great to see talented people get good opportunities. And like, that's a great organization to be in. If you are a young coach or a coach he's had a pretty, you know, long and illustrious career to this point, but a guy that's trying to take that next step, being in a situation like the Seattle system, which is so new, where you can kind of mark your territory and make your name, it's a great opportunity.
But not only that, I mean, coming off the back-to-back Calder Cup final appearances at the team, you've built a winning tradition. You better go find a winning coach now to continue that. Yep. Because if you bring in some lame duck, and the franchise sort of takes a downward trajectory, people aren't going to want to play there anymore. So thinking that Laxdal's the right guy, just because again he's got that history of winning, and I think that's going to be good for Coachella Valley, whether or not he wants to move up after that, whether there's an opportunity to move up to Seattle after that. I don't think it matters to him at this point. I think it's just an opportunity to get back into the A, get working on with some of these good young players, the Shane Wrights, the Cole Lins, the Ty Karchis, and see those players maybe make a big difference for Seattle at some point as well.
Yeah, and then just kind of see where things go from there.
Yeah, like, exactly.
If you can get, get an opportunity somewhere else, or something happens and you get a shot at the NHL with that organization, like it's just it's a great situation for him. And as you said, like it's a great, it's a great fit, I think, for the Seattle Coachella Valley franchise to have a winning coach with a winning pedigree come in there and keep things moving forward for what has become very quickly a franchise to be a part of.
Some other little stories about coaching. You ready for this? We got lots of some U Sports tie-ins and stuff. We'll start in Canada West, actually. I didn't actually tell you about this, Jane. I forgot about it until I remembered it just a few seconds ago when I was looking for the story, and I found it. But you'll be pleasantly surprised to know that on Tuesday, PWHL New York announced that Mount Royal Cougars assistant coach Lauren Williams has been hired as an assistant coach for the PWHL team.
Nice.
Williams joined PWHL New York from Mount Royal, obviously, where she spent last season working with the Cougars. She was the first university's first ever full-time women's hockey assistant coach. Like awesome. full-time paid assistant coach under Scott. And legitimately she worked some magic last year where Mount Royal had another great season or whatever. So Lauren Williams is off to New York to join head coach Greg Fargo in that organization. So congratulations to her. That's awesome. That's kind of cool. Another big announcement came from the other coast as the UNB Reds made an announcement. They're hiring an associate head coach, two-time Atlantic University sportsman-like player. Taylor Mashmeyer has been named as the full-time associate coach of the women's hockey team out at UNB. Awesome. Pretty awesome to see that, because Mashmeyer, who was then known as Taylor Dale way back when she played hockey, was part of the St. FX women's team in 2013 and 2015 because the Reds didn't have a team when she played. So she's kind of swapping colors and swapping schools to the arch rivals. But at the end of the day, though, Taylor Mashmeyer is going to take over that head coaching position and work with Cassidy Hillworth while Sarah Hillworth is off with her kids and everything. So nice to see Taylor getting a good opportunity this way. If for those that might go, that Mashmeyer name sounds familiar. Yes, it is familiar. She is actually married to Emerence Mashmeyer's brother, Bronson. So hockey's running in the family there.
That's awesome. Yeah, because when you texted, it was like, wait, don't I don't I know that name?
You do.
Yeah.
So going to be a long stretch of you know, good hockey coaches and the hockey players that will come out of that Mashmeyer sort of setup and everything or whatever. That family is going to be crazy. So kind of awesome to see that. Another announcement that I didn't really fill you in on, Jay, and I'm probably going to fill you in on now, is that former Manitoba Bisons forward and national champion, a former New York Riveters head coach, Venla Hovi, is pregnant.
Oh, that's awesome.
So Venla's going to have a little baby coming up. Her and Amanda Pelkey expecting sometime in the winter there. So congratulations to both of them.
Congrats.
That's kind of awesome. Yeah, so fantastic news that way. Let's get into some of the other stuff here, because there's other coaches to mention as well. For those that may have heard, the BFL Women in Coaching Awards were handed out this past week. For those who don't know, Hockey Canada works with BFL, and they are on the hunt for the country's best women behind benches. They basically have a number of different categories and definitions. They have a community coach, competitive coach, high-performance coaches. Basically, they break it down by province, and you're going to recognize some names, because we had some former guests of the hockey show that made the names here. One of them being Reagan Bolton. Reagan actually won for Manitoba. She's the head coach of the Balmoral Hall Blazers, so she won for Manitoba. The other woman who won was Brenda McCallum, who won the community award in Manitoba, so I want to make sure we recognize her as well. So congratulations to both of them. Speaking of other names that we do know and other names that we have encountered, Fielding Montgomery, who played for the Markham Thunder in the CWHL, we had her on the show a couple of times. Fielding actually won in Nova Scotia. She's actually from there. I think she went to Dalhousie. Does that sound right? Dalhousie? I think that's where she's from. Anyway, Fielding is one of the coaches that went out there. So congratulations to her. She's doing awesome out there in terms of what she's doing. And then the other name is very familiar to us. She comes from Saskatchewan. You might know her. We talked about her a couple of weeks ago. She took over the Saskatoon Stars. That would be one Alana Sirhan as the winner out in Saskatchewan. So congratulations to those three. Former guests here on the hockey show, and certainly women that we've talked to as well. So happy to highlight them, and certainly their accomplishments as well, which is kind of cool to see in terms of getting that all done. Holding out on this though, Jay, and I know we've got a couple minutes left here in terms of getting this going. I was holding out because I know you're super excited about this team, and I still hate them, and I don't like their name at all. But the ECHL's Tahoe Night Monsters have been busy.
Night Monsters.
Just a terrible name, but that's fine. Let's start
very
with
80s and 90s. I love it.
Let's start with the obvious. On May 29th, the Night Monsters went out and hired their inaugural head coach. His name is Alex Lowe. Alex Lowe was an assistant coach, and he took over the head coaching position last year in Savannah, the Savannah Ghost Pirates in the ECHL. He was an interim head coach as they fired their head coach in February. He took over the role. He had 16 wins in their final 31 games, helped Savannah sort of, you know, navigate the waters there. Prior to that, though, he was head coach for 3 seasons with the Adirondack Thunder, and then he also served as 3 seasons prior to that as their assistant and associate coach beginning in 2015. So Lowe's pretty experienced in the ECHL, knows a lot about the ECHL, should be a good fit in Lake Tahoe and Tahoe for the Night Monsters. So they got an experienced head coach, which is kind of nice to see. They announced their schedule on June 4th. Not a lot of surprises here, because they basically play in the Mountain Division. For those that don't know where that is, that includes the Allen Americans, Idaho Steelheads, Kansas City Mavericks, Rapid City Rush, Tulsa Oilers, Utah Grizzlies, and Wichita Thunder. If you're feeling brave, Jay, we might have to make a run down to South Dakota and see them in Rapid City if you want to go see this team.
Yes.
They'll also play host to the South Division of Jacksonville Ice Mill, the Fort Wayne Comets of the Central Division, North Division's Adirondack Thunder, as those teams will make the trip down to Lake Tahoe and see the Night Monsters down there. They're also going to travel the 3 out-of-division road trips, and that'll include the Maine Mariners in the North Division, the Florida Everblades in the South Division, the Iowa Heartlanders in the Central Division. So we may be able to see them either in Iowa or in Rapid City. I'm just trying to see when they visit Rapid City, if we can maybe... Here we are. Friday and Saturday and Sunday, 3 games against Rapid City, January 10th through 12th, Jay. So clear your schedule.
Okay. Okay. I'll get ready.
If you can't make those ones, 17th, 18th, 19th, they're in Iowa, Cedar Rapids, Iowa. So I think that's where they play. Cedar Rapids? No, I don't think it's Cedar Rapids. Somewhere in Iowa, anyway. where they play the Heartlanders, so we can go see them there as well. So
I do want to see the Heartlanders. So
well, there you go. We can go see the Heartlanders and the Lake Monsters at the same time, or the Night Monsters at the same time. So there you go. Finally, they have signed their first player, forward Anthony Collins. He's 34 years old. He played with the Savannah Ghost Pirates last season. 6'4", 216-pound winger. Led them in penalty minutes last season with 140.
Nice.
So they're bringing a little toughness to the Tahoe region there with Collins signing. But Anthony Collins is the first player in Tahoe Knights history, Night Monsters history, to be signed, which is kind of fun. He's for those that don't know, he's played 11 seasons of hockey. He has 1,042 penalty minutes and 538 career ECHL games. Nice. He's a bit of a scrapper. Mm-hmm. They also signed yesterday they signed Brendan Kapcheck, a defenseman. He played with Newfoundland last season before Newfoundland folded. So Kapcheck gets an opportunity to jump back in. So they have two players under contract. But here's the reason we're talking about them, because next Tuesday, July 16th, next Tuesday night at Bally's Lake Tahoe, they are going to announce their jerseys. So we're going to see what the jerseys look like for the Tahoe Night Monsters, their mascot, and their NHL and AHL affiliations all on that night from 6 to 8 p.m. at Bally's Lake Tahoe. Prevailing thought is it's probably going to be Vegas, but we'll have to see.
I mean, if you look at their colorway and you think about the fact that they chose K-N-I-G-H-T for Night Monsters.
Okay, here's the thing, though. It's all light blue, though, which is the same color as Utah.
Utah took that after.
But hey, it all fits, right? Like, I mean...
Yeah, and Utah is close to...
That is correct.
Tahoe. I mean, the only other options aside from Vegas and Utah are Carolina and Columbus. I'm trying to think of teams that are in that area.
I mean, Utah would be wise, but Tulsa. Utah would be wise to go with the Utah Grizzlies. Like, let's be honest with that. Like, that would be wise if they didn't.
I think that's kind of should be set in stone at this point. But yeah, I think it kind of has to be Vegas at this point.
Oh, we'll see. I guess. We'll know on Tuesday though. So get your clear schedules, folks, if you're down in around the Lake Tahoe area, because the Tahoe Night Monsters are. It's a free event too. They're apparently going to let everybody in that wants to come. So
yeah, you can sign up to get into the event right now on their website. Yeah,
which would be awesome. So that is the big announcement out of the ECHL. Other than that, it's been pretty quiet for a lot of the signings and a lot of the stuff that's going on there. But we've covered a lot of the important stuff. One last note, if you're looking for something to do around Winnipeg this weekend, the Manitoba's Junior Golf Championship is going to be held at Niaqua Golf Club. Former Hockey Show guest Addison Cartouche, who's now graduated from the St. Mary's Academy Flames, is the favorite going into that event after she won the Women's Amateur Championship this past week at Minnedosa.
Nice.
We know Addison's very good. She's going to Bowling Green next year to play golf. She won the Masters Championship in May, and she's won the Amateur Championship now in July, and she has the chance to win the Junior Championship to make it the quote-unquote hat trick for Golf Manitoba in terms of winning all those events. So we're going to be cheering on Addison this weekend as she goes for another championship here in Manitoba before leaving and heading down to Bowling Green University, where she's going to play golf the Falcons in the fall.
Nice.
Other than that, we're pretty much out of time here, Jay. Anything you want to say before we get out of here?
Where I worked during high school and a little bit of university, Dakota Family Foods is closing down after 20 years.
What?
My thoughts are with the current employees and some friends that I have that still work there. Hopefully you land on your feet.
I was going to say, I'm that's sad to hear, but I mean, hopefully everybody can find a place to land and maybe something else can move in there and sort of pick up the pace where they're leaving off at that point. So
I mean, it's set up to be a grocery store.
Sounds like it would work if you're going to get in there. So let's see what happens. But with that, folks, we're out of here for another week. All the best to everybody at the grocery store there. And hopefully they, like I said, everybody lands on their feet there. But another hockey show in the books. We'll reconvene next week, everybody, on Thursday. So thanks for joining us this week here on the Hockey Show. We'll see you next week on Thursday. Don't stop the rocket to the bang bang boogie. Say up, up the boogie to the rhythm of the boogie.
Covering all genres of music, including Swedish remakes of Rapper's Delight, you're listening to CJUM FM 101.5 in Winnipeg.
Ever hit the groove? Then my friend, you're gonna turn to move your feet. Whoa! See, I am under me, can I believe?